let me in. Shiba, shiba. I want to be closer to you. Shiba, shiba. Open up your soul. Shiba, shiba. Let me find that part of you, the part that nobody ever knew.
Let me touch your.
Hello and welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show where we try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something, and appreciate something. There's so much art and talent in the Bay Area. It's hard to know where to go, but anywhere you go, you're going to find some amazing art and some amazing artists, and they can't all be seen in the places that you normally go. And so to that end, I'd like to welcome my next guest, Executive Director from Root Division, Michelle Mansour. Welcome.
Thanks so much, Marilyn. It's great to be here.
So tell me a little bit about Root Division. What exactly is that?
Yeah, thank you. So Root Division, we're a visual arts nonprofit. We're located at Mission and 7th Street. And primarily what we do is provide discounted workspace to emerging visual artists in exchange for volunteer service in the community. And some of the things that the artists do to contribute include helping us produce free public programming in our gallery, as well as teaching classes. We teach classes for adults on site, as well as free classes in about 8 after-school programs in the neighborhood.
Wow. How long have you guys been doing that?
We just celebrated our 20-year anniversary last year, so
okay,
a little bit over 20 years. And, we've been in the Soma neighborhood since 2015. We were in the Mission before that.
Okay. So whose brainchild was that?
Well, the organization was founded, in 2002. It was originally a project developed by 3 graduates of the MFA program at San Francisco Art Institute.
Mm-hmm.
I was friends with and colleagues with those folks at the Art Institute at that time, and I came on in 2003 to pilot our youth education program. That's the one where we recruit, train, and place artists to teach free classes in after-school programs. And then I became moved into a leadership role in 2006. And, we have a really stellar team that puts together the programming.
Okay, so talk a little bit about, so you mentioned that you teach, one of the things they do is they teach classes. What kind of classes do they teach the kids?
Yeah, so we really are focused on project-based learning in our youth program. And so what that means is we encourage artists to sort of teach from their expertise, their own skill set, and their personal practice.
Mm-hmm.
But what we do is we help them make sure that that's age-appropriate, to scaffold lessons, to kind of adapt things so that they are culturally relevant,
mm-hmm,
and, like I said, age-appropriate and accessible. And so that can be anything from drawing, painting, sculpture, even, photography, a little bit of video.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes includes performance and such, but, it's a real range, and it really depends on the artists that are in our program at any given time.
Okay, and so you talk to kids. What's the youngest kid that you have in the programs?
We're mostly working with kindergarten through high school, and I would say several of our teaching sites are focused on, kindergarten through 5th grade, so
mm-hmm,
about 5 years to 12 years old is our main focus, but we have been doing also work with middle school and high school and even transitional age youth in a few different community centers.
Okay. And in addition to teaching kids, what other types of things do the artists do as part of their volunteer hours?
Yeah, so the idea of the program is really set up to be a cross between an artist residency and an incubator program. So the artists come in, they get an affordable place to make their work. Mm-hmm. They're gaining professional and creative development opportunities and then giving back in the process. And so, like, you know, we talked about, you know, one of those main ways is by going into the community and teaching youth. But we also have classes that we offer on site. Mm-hmm. They're really affordable tuition, anywhere from one class meeting to 6 weeks. And that's, you know, intro to drawing, figure drawing, acrylic painting, oil painting, collage, and as well as professional development workshops. So the artists design and lead in instructed classes in that capacity. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that we do is we run a gallery. It's about 2,000 square feet, ground floor. And we have what's called the Second Saturday exhibition series. So second Saturday of every month, we host an opening or an event that features exhibition of mostly emerging local artists from the Bay Area, but sometimes also includes national and international artists as well.
Now, how do the artists qualify to get into your program to do that?
Yeah, great question. So the studios program is, you know, an application-based program. We take applications, you know, the first of every month, okay. And we review them. And, of course, you know, we're looking at portfolio and experience, but we're also looking at just the interest and capacity to give back. We're really also specifically interested in making sure that our cohort is diverse and inclusive and really matches the communities that we're in partnership with. So we've developed a few fellowships over the past 15 years that really speak to those communities. The longest running fellowship is our Latinx Teaching Artist Fellowship, which is two artists who teach at Mission Education Center, which is a newcomer school for recently immigrated children from Latin American countries. And they're learning everything in Spanish for a year before they're mainstreamed into the rest of the public school system. So our artists are, you know, working along a cultural calendar and incorporating their own love and interests and skills around art making with the school's programming. It's a really, really beautiful curriculum called My Two Homes that we've been teaching there. And then based on that, we have created a few other fellowships, which include free studios and teaching stipends, one for the Filipinx Teaching Artist Fellow, that works with our local Soma community, as well as a Bay Area Black Artist Fellowship that we started in 2020, and an Artist in Action Fellowship. So those artists develop community-based projects that they want to pursue and that are sort of meaningful to their practice and that support our mission of providing, you know, affordable and accessible arts opportunities.
Excellent. Now, you've just opened a show called Introductions 2023. Can you tell our listening audience about that?
Yes, absolutely. So we've been doing this show for 17 years now. Every fall, it's kind of our fall opener. And what it is it's a way to debut and showcase a dozen emerging local talent in the Bay Area. And so it's always a juried show. We had three fantastic jurors review over 200 submissions.
Wow.
And then, you know, narrowed it down to the top 12. And so those artists and their work are showcased in our gallery from August 10th. So the show opened last week, and that runs through September 16th.
Okay. So what kind of art gets generally accepted? Is it just painting or what's the range?
Yeah, great question. So it really depends on, you know, it rotates, depends on the jurors and sort of the interest. This year's show is really eclectic. There is quite a bit of mixed media, so artwork that incorporates, you know, not only painting, but also fiber and sculpture. There's some installation-based works, a lot of textiles we've seen come through in the past year, a lot of work where the surface is built up. For example, Callan Porter Romero is, intersectional identity, Black, Japanese, and Mexican, mm-hmm. and is really focused on using building up the surface with paint and recycled materials like cardboard and fabric, mm-hmm. and focusing on hands. They're really, really beautiful, detailed pieces that kind of talk about the American dream and labor. Okay. Another artist who is actually one of our studio artists, Nibba Akaredi, is... made these large scale drawings and paintings, and they really focus on her history growing up and being influenced by sort of a very machismo kind of background. And so she's doing these really interesting, detailed, they almost feel like quilts, but they're drawings. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of detail and sort of juxtaposing like this sort of machismo toxicity that's influenced her, but also the sort of maternal powers that she's grown up around as well. So those are really incredible works. Carolina Cuevas has done these combinations of fabric and ceramic that sort of hang very tall, not from the ceiling, but tall against the wall, mm-hmm. and just really multi-layered sort of material explorations, thinking about oral tradition and passing down stories through the process of art making. So it's really, really a beautiful and an eclectic show.
Okay. And where is the show happening?
Yeah, thanks. So it's in the Root Division Gallery. So we are at 1131 Mission. Okay. That's between 7th and 8th Streets, okay. in Soma, just south of Market. Mm-hmm. Super accessible by the Mission 14 bus or, you know, Civic Center BART, as well as, you know, off the freeway. So
okay. And so when is the gallery open for viewing?
Sure. So we... So the show is up from August 10th through September 16th, mm-hmm. and we have gallery hours Wednesday through Saturdays from 2 to 6 p.m.
Okay.
Also, if you wanted to come outside of that, you can also email visit@rootdivision.org and set up a time where we definitely welcome, you know, individuals to come by with a friend, or even if you want to schedule a group tour, we're happy to do that as well.
Okay. So state those hours again for our listening audience.
Yeah, it's Wednesday through Saturday from 2 to 6 p.m.
Okay. And then for the budding artists out there who don't have gallery representation and who are just now finding out about this program, how do they go about, being considered to enter the program?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. So on our website, there is a page that's dedicated to all the artist opportunities that we have, to studios, to fellowships, to internships, mm-hmm. As well as calls for artists in shows and teaching and jobs. And that's rootdivision.org/apply. And that, you know, that page just has all the different ways that you can get involved or try,
Excellent. So Michelle Mansour, we're almost out of time. So is there any one thing you would like to leave our listening audience with?
Well, just to say that the reception for the show is public, open to the public, and it's a really fun event. It's Saturday, September 9th from 7 to 9 p.m. That's the second Saturday of September. We invite you to come out. There will be refreshments as well as a free creative station, which is an all-ages art activity-making station. So, nice. Love to see you and save the date.
So that's September 9th. What time?
7 to 9 p.m.
Excellent. Well, Michelle Mansour, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today and for telling our listening audience about this great opportunity for young artists to both see art and maybe create art.
Thank you so much. It's been so great to be a guest.
All right. People of Earth, there you have it. It is the Introductions 2023. I think you're going to like it. I really, really do. You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. You know I love me some Graham Central Station, and that was Intro, which was highlighting Introductions 2023. Who's about to touch your mind right now? Well, there are many great artists that came out of San Francisco Graham Central Station's one. Sylvester is another one, and there is a show happening called Sylvester, the Mighty Reel. Here to talk about it from Aizen, the director of the show, Michael French. Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Fine. How are you?
Well, you have the perfect voice for this meeting, don't you? Oh, my God. I was listening to it thinking, wow, some people are just born with that voice. You found the right outlet. Incredible.
Well, thank you. Thank you. But we're not here to talk about me. We're here to talk about you, or more specifically, we're here to talk about the show that you're directing. So why don't you tell our listening audience a little bit about it?
I think the most important thing to know about it is that it's a walk-in show, a walk-in play, rather, meaning that it's not just held inside. You start at Lower Haight and sort of walk to about a mile up Haight. Some of the scenes are taking place inside. Some of the scenes are outside. And for those who are not that familiar with Sylvester, a 1970s, 80s, disco star, I suppose. Mighty Reel being the most famous song. And whilst it's not a biography, we're not trying to tell Sylvester's life. We're trying to elevate Sylvester to the realm of sainthood for all that Sylvester did. For San Francisco, for us, for their community. It's a multidisciplinary, multimedia kind of performance, I suppose.
Oh, okay. So what was the impetus for putting the show together?
Well, Seth Eisen, who's behind the show, the production company behind the show, has a manifesto, a belief in wanting to take gay and queer history and elevate it, the ones that are more sort of hidden in the shadows, ones that haven't really got the claim that they should have done. Mm-hmm. And so Sylvester being one of them, and he got in touch with me and said, we're doing this show, we got this idea for a show, would you be interested in directing? I said, yes, but you do know that I don't identify as either gay or queer, and as our communities are all trying to tell our own stories, rightly, are you sure about that? And so we talked about it over a little period of time and came to the realization that maybe because I have some distance from the subject, both in terms of neither being gay or queer identified, as well as not even being American. Just in case anyone's wondering, that I might be able to bring a sort of slightly different lens to it, and hopefully that's what I've done.
Okay, so, but we're actually talking, we're talking queer, and we're talking people of color as well as American. So, all of those things that you have a distance from, were there any things that you discovered in directing the show that maybe you didn't know about having sort of distance from it?
Before I get to that, first of all, I am a person of color. So I'm black British.
Okay, so
there's an identification there in some senses. Were there things that I didn't know? Certainly. There's a lot of things I didn't know. I didn't know so much about the activism of Sylvester. I had been raised, born and raised on the other side of the Atlantic. I had a pretty, what I now know to be a pretty superficial idea as to what Sylvester was. And the activism got hidden somewhere in my knowledge. And so as much as I was directing the piece, I was also being educated at the same time. And for Sylvester to, Sylvester to me had 21st century ideas and values, was living in the 20th century. And as we're going through this period where we're beginning to undo a lot of the things we were fed through the 20th century, whether it's about a binary idea of gender, whether it's survival of the fittest, whether it's winner takes all these attitudes that we've been fed through the 20th century, which are now beginning to undo. Sylvester was already thinking those things way back then. And to have that idea of I am both male and female, which is what I understand Sylvester saw themselves as, at that time, Elton John was still in the closet. Freddie Mercury was kind of around and out, but in a very sort of within the community, wasn't necessarily mainstream. And for Sylvester to say, here I am, and to be the first gay-identified black person on MTV. I mean, they were big, big strides that Sylvester took by themselves. You know, by themselves, as someone who was raised in a Pentecostal believing family in mm-hmm. Watts in L.A., mm-hmm. to sort of stand by who they are. To me, that more than anything is what fascinated me and wanted to be involved.
Okay.
I just think, you know, there are some people that are born and sort of arrive on Earth and they're fully formed. And they have this belief in themselves, which certainly took me a long time to find in myself. Mm-hmm. But they have this sort of no regrets attitude to their life. Muhammad Ali's one, Angela Davis, Bob Dylan, Nelson Mandela, Nina Simone. I could reel off a handful of people that made the world adjust to them. And right in the middle of that group is Sylvester, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. So how does Sylvester Mighty Real differentiate itself from the musical about Sylvester?
Oh, from what I understand about the musical, I didn't see it. I thought a lot about it. We're not a jukebox production. You're not going to hear sort of a chronologically ordered Sylvester songs. You're not going to necessarily, I mean, there's certainly the glamour, the fabulousness of Sylvester's life, but not from the point of view of the music. The music, strangely enough, I'd say takes a slightly, it doesn't take a back seat. It takes a sort of second seat, if you like, to Sylvester's belief in God, mm-hmm. to Sylvester's belief in being who you are and owning your whole self. And so it's a very, very different production from that point of view. It's much more about the beliefs of Sylvester rather than what Sylvester may have been perceived by from the outside.
Okay. Now, where did the source material come from? How did you find out all of the backstory of Sylvester?
Well, there's two halves to that. The first of the writer is Marvin K. White, who some people may know as the pastor at Glide in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And Marvin writes choreo poems. And so they are poems that are metaphorically driven much more than sort of literally driven. Mm-hmm. And so there are these poems that were written about Sylvester. And so the script itself is made from a series of poems. So yes, there's dialogue, but it's written in a very poetic, elevated realism style of writing.
Mm-hmm.
And then personally, I had to do a lot of research into in terms of Sylvester's actual life, the facts of Sylvester's life, when Sylvester came to San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
what happened then, when they joined the Coquettes, which were, they were sort of countercultural drag musicians.
Mm-hmm.
But really, we really leaned into the idea of treating the whole piece on a more metaphoric, poetry-based sort of style of telling the story.
Mm-hmm.
And Marvin, who's a brilliant... I mean, if you've ever been to Glide and never heard Marvin speak, he writes and speaks in the same way. And so we didn't want to sort of try and change that too much into sort of a regular prose type kind of presentation, so we went with the poetry of it all.
Mm-hmm.
So it's impressionistic as much as is anything else. And I sort of did the research in the background just so that I would make the right steps with this poetry. I didn't want to sort of assume something that wouldn't be borne out by fact.
So given that, who are the characters that populate this piece? Besides, I mean, obviously Sylvester, but who else?
Actually, we don't have a person playing Sylvester.
Oh.
Well, we have. Yeah, I know. And even as I say it to myself, I said, how did we do this? We have Daryl and Nick Summerfield.
Mm-hmm.
Daryl Thigpen are the people called the Twins. And they have been, I wouldn't say sent to Earth, but they are on Earth searching for the journey Sylvester, as I said right at the very beginning of this show, to elevate Sylvester to be a queer ancestor, a queer gay ancestor to sainthood, to join all the other queer ancestors that are already there.
Okay.
And so really, we're on their journey as they look for the journey that Sylvester took while in San Francisco. And then once finding Sylvester, there's a ceremony, which at the time we were rehearsing, Charles in England was it was the coronation of Charles after the death of Queen Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. And I remember looking at it thinking, God, this is a great idea to take some aspect of this and have a sort of gay, queer version of the royal coronation. And so that's what we do. We do a coronation, but of Sylvester rather than Charles. And in what I'd like to think is a gay, queer aesthetic. And they elevate Sylvester to sainthood.
Okay. So is it a two-person show, or are there more actors in it?
It's a two-person show.
Okay.
But there's a lot of things that happen in the background, which the audience won't necessarily get to see, that allow it to be a sort of multi-dimensional experience. Mm-hmm. But it is a two-person show. You wear headphones for the majority of it. So that's where the walk-in tour comes into play. So you listen to interstitials that sometimes have interviews with people that knew Sylvester at the time in the 1970s.
Okay.
Some people who lived in the Ashbury area during the 1970s and 80s. And so whilst we start with Sylvester, we don't stay there. We look at the gay, queer community of that time, as well as women's rights, the black rights, anything that was asking to be heard is somehow involved in this piece. And as I say, you wear headphones for some of it, and then you watch something happen live in front of you, and then you wear headphones again and listen to something else.
Okay, okay. So when and where for this show?
When and where? So it just started this past weekend. Mm-hmm. It goes until October the 1st. It's Friday, Saturday, and Sundays, with two shows on Sundays, I think, mm-hmm. and two shows on Saturday. You can get tickets from EYEZEN, that's EYEZEN.org. Mm-hmm. And as I say, there's two shows on some days. As soon as I haven't had to buy a ticket, I must admit some of the details don't come to me straight away. So if you have them there that you think the audience should know, please.
Well, let me ask you this. So you're saying it's a walking tour. So where does it start?
So it starts Lower Haight, which is near Buena Vista Park. Mm-hmm. And then we walk, as I say, approximately about a mile in total, with different stops along the way, some of which are directly involved with Sylvester, and some of which we are creating a scene around Sylvester using Marvin's poetry. And then we end up by coming back to the beginning, in effect, and then doing the sainthood ceremony.
Okay, I think you said it earlier. Does it ever go indoors, or is it entirely outdoors?
No, it does both. And so the majority of it, I'd say 60-70% of it is outdoors.
Okay.
So you're walking, listening to a soundtrack, some of which is, as I say, interviews, some of which is music. And then we'll go inside, do a scene using the twins as actors. And then we go back outside again, listen to something else on headphones. And then go back inside again and watch another live piece using Marvin's beautiful lyricism.
So you said it's already open. So how did it flow for you for this first weekend?
It's so funny you say that. I don't know how much I'll say this. Creativity, man. I was reminded how little anyone knows about how creativity works.
Uh-huh.
In other words, there are so many periods during this rehearsal period where I was lost. I was lost. I didn't quite know how to sort of approach it. We were approaching it without a Sylvester, which would have been the easier way to do this. We were using poetry rather than sort of written dialogue that sounded, quote unquote, more naturalistic.
Uh-huh.
And there are lots of times where all of us were looking at each other saying, is this the right idea? Is this the right idea?
Mm-hmm.
And then you get it in front of strangers and they get to see it with fresh eyes, fresh heart, and the response was so good. Even now, I'm still a little dumbfounded by this thing that created so much confusion at times, so much turmoil at times, and then you put it in front of people, and they come back to you and tell you what you were trying to do, and then you go, "Oh yeah, that is what I was trying to do." It's only when you get it in front of an audience that sometimes you realize that. And it's the most beautiful thing, creativity and the way it works and doesn't work and its lack of being understood. There's no one that really understands how it works. Where does this idea come from out of the blue? And then again, you see other people's reaction to it and this idea that you're not sure about takes on its own life. I am so happy with this production. I am so happy with what the audience so far are reacting to, and there's a healing aspect to it as well, that I could never have written down what this play was going to be like or sat at my desk and just said, okay, this is the script. Somehow we needed to go through all these detours and sort of dead ends and sort of bits uphill and bits downhill to find this piece that really took everyone involved to find it. I certainly didn't find it. Marvin certainly didn't write it. Seth didn't produce it. Somehow it's all of us being together that's made this thing.
Well, I'm glad that, because I understand the anxiety of creation, and I'm glad that your fears and apprehensions were, I guess, eliminated. So once more for our listening audience, where can they get tickets?
Sure. So go online to eisen.org, Eisen's EYEZEN.org. And you should see a sort of tab that says Sylvester Out of Sight, Mighty Real. Again, the shows are Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, 12 o'clock and 3 o'clock on Sunday, 12 o'clock and 3 o'clock on Saturday, and just 12 o'clock on Friday.
All right. Well, Michael French, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. People of Earth, this is your opportunity. Sylvester, the Mighty Real. Tickets available at... Michael told us the website.
So. Eisen.org.
Eisen.org. All right. So here's a little taste of what you may hear on the headphones.
You got a match? Mm-hmm. The fabulous crowd. Look at all the fabulous people.
Yes.
You want to dance?
Yes, I'd love to.
Let's party a little bit.
All right.
Teenage version of me is just so happy. happy right now is dancing up a storm. The grown-up version of me is being a responsible adult who actually conducts my interviews on time. That's Sylvester and Disco Heat. You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. Who's about to touch your mind right now? Well, I got to see a production called Josephine's Feast on Friday. Our very own Donald Lacey was in it. He nailed it. All the actors were fantastic. I want to welcome both the writer and one of the actors. So, writer Star Finch and actress Tierra Allen. Welcome, ladies.
Hello, great.
Hello,
to be here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for being on the show today. The first question goes to author Star Finch. What was it? What was the inspiration for Josephine's Feast?
Well, I started writing this play during quarantine in 2020. Mm-hmm. I had a production that was supposed to go up, a play called Side Effects, in March of 2020, and it ended up getting canceled.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in the house feeling kind of down about that.
Sure.
And feeling confused about what was going on in the world, like everyone else.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And I just, I started to think a lot about how I would feel as a woman and a mother. I have two children.
Mm-hmm.
If I had never pursued my creative passion, my creative
mm-hmm.
interests. And just from that thought, sort of marinating, the character of Josephine stepped forward. And I just continued to dig deeper and deeper over the year, even as the year got crazier and crazier with the fires and, you know, the Bay Area, and waking up that morning where the sky was orange,
yeah.
you know, so the sky sort of plays a big role in the play.
Uh-huh.
And just really digging deep and investigating the role of motherhood, you know, as I was trapped in the house with my kids every day, you know, on Zoom school. And and what does that mean to be a mother, and what does that role give, and what does it take?
Interesting. And now I want to talk to Tierra. So, Tierra, who do you play in the play?
I play Lonnie, who is a character visiting from Portland, and she's actually the only character who's not sort of part of the biological family around
sure.
Josephine.
Mm-hmm.
She's a friend of the eldest daughter, Lex, played by the amazing Brittany Frazier.
Mm-hmm.
And so she, there's a way where with, you know, some of the distance that she has from these dynamics of the family, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, Star mentioning this happening during quarantine,
mm-hmm.
That she brings sort of a different way of seeing Josephine that other characters, because of their relationship to her as primarily as a mother, as an aunt, as a sister, she doesn't have those lenses and that history with her. So she sees Josephine in a different way,
mm-hmm.
And in a way that it feels like Josephine's really longing to be seen.
So going back to Star, when you look, I brought a friend with me because it was her birthday, and I was like, we're going to go see this. And she recognized all the family dynamics. So, and this actually is for both of you. Have you ever seen those family dynamics in your own families?
For me, I mean, I guess as a daughter, yes, there's definitely situations where, you know, two sisters, and there's the director, Ellen Sebastian Chang, in our rehearsals talked a lot about triangulations and the sort of relationships and power dynamics where it's sort of two against one. And I think that depending on the families, that definitely can happen with, you know, siblings and the mom is on one side, or
mm-hmm.
you know, a niece and their favorite aunt or uncle, and then the parent, you know, is on the other side of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't had anything specific to the play happen, but it's definitely those triangulations, I think, that people are recognizing.
All right, Tierra, I'm about to get you in trouble. Have you seen that?
Oh, for sure. And actually, I was able to bring my own mother out to see the production. And part of why I wanted to be able to give her the gift of being in the room with the story is, you know, to also witness and recognize that, yeah, I see the work that she has done to uphold so many people
mm-hmm.
In our family, you know, having to be the person who is strong and shows up for everybody else. And then, and also has her own dreams and her own aspirations that don't always get the space, the air, the support that they could, if maybe she had more support. And in terms of thinking about dynamics that I'm seeing in, there's these two daughters of Josephine's in the play, seeing this way, the ways that as your parents, as you as a child get older, mm-hmm. And come into your adulthood, your young adulthood, there's those ways where you can start to look at your parents a little differently, and you mm-hmm. can see maybe where they still have room to grow. But at the same time, they're still in a place of parenting you. But being in that, a space where you're still coming into your adulthood and navigating those changes, I think has been very relatable to many folks.
Excellent. Excellent. So for our listening audience, can you give us sort of an overview of the plot of Josephine's Feast? I mean, I know that it's about you followed a different timeline for you of how your life would be if you hadn't have been able to follow your dream. So with that in mind, what's the overview and why is it called Josephine's Feast?
So the overview on Josephine's Feast is that it's Josephine's birthday. She's a mother in her mid-50s. And she's calling her family together to celebrate her birthday with a barbecue. Mm-hmm. And she has a big announcement that she wants to share with them, which is, pretty much that during quarantine, she's met some people online through taking Zoom classes. She's connected with this new community. And she really wants to sort of go out and meet these people and explore herself with them. And this side to herself that feels new, but is also a sort of reclamation and a recovering mm-hmm. of who she was before she became a parent. And she knows that there's going to be a lot of resistance to that. Mm-hmm. And she's tried to, prepare herself for that. And so the sort of chaos that ensues is what drives the play.
And I noticed you had real food on the table.
We did.
Not as much as the actors would like.
Yes, I would say that. There is some acting into going into making that food feel as delicious as it would be if it was a real barbecue. Let me just say that.
Yeah, because I was the first. I was like, is that real? Are they really eating? They're really eating. Is that corn? What's going
mm-hmm.
on?
I think the person who sells it the most is Donald Lacey, though. He really digs in.
Yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And he's actually like the kind of, not so much alcoholic, but the boozy uncle. I think we all have a boozy uncle, who's like, kind of free with the liquor with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No comment.
Oh, are you the boozy aunt? Are you the boozy aunt? You are the boozy aunt. You're not saying.
No comment.
All right. So Josephine's Feast, in addition to you, who are the other actors who are in the play and who do they play?
So the lead, Josephine, is played by Margot Hall.
Go ahead, Tiara.
Played brilliantly by Margot Hall. Mm-hmm. Donald Lacey plays Josephine's brother, Tony. There's also Trayvon Bell, who plays the nephew, Jaden. And then there's Jasmine Williams and Britt Fraser, who play the two daughters, Amaya and Lex.
Okay. And for our listening audience, how long is it going to be playing? How much longer?
We go until this Sunday, the 20th is our last day.
Oh, okay. So this is the last opportunity to go see it. So where is it playing? I mean, I know, but they don't.
It is playing. Yeah, sure. It's at the Magic Theater, which is over in Fort Mason, mm-hmm. 2 Marina Boulevard, Building D, 3rd floor. And the website is magictheater.org mm-hmm. with theater spelled T-H-E-A-T-R-E.
Okay. And then you said that you wrote this play during lockdown is how I view it in the between mm-hmm. times. But what other plays have you written?
The first play I ever wrote for Campo Santo was in 2016, and that was a play called Home, which stood for Hookers on Mars Eventually. I have another play called Bondage, uh-huh. and that one was actually published, so you can actually find that one online. I also wrote a play, Side Effects, but that was the one that was shut down during COVID. And then this is my fourth one, Josephine's Thief.
Okay, so I need to go back to Hookers on Mars eventually, because that sounds hilarious. So tell me about that one.
Hookers on Mars eventually was a play inspired by a photograph that I saw of two sex workers who were looking through a telescope up into space. It was like a university-grade telescope, and this photographer brought it out to this area called Hunt's Point and let the kids and the people in the neighborhood look at it. So when I saw this image, I started to wonder, you know, like, who is going to get to live in outer space, right? If that's the path that we're supposedly on, who's going to get to go, who isn't, and why not? So this this character came forth, Tima, who's a sex worker, and she wants to go find her son, who is on Mars with her brother. I'm sorry, with her sister, who works in the Google diversity department. And it follows her on her path to get up there and tell her son that she is actually his mother. And it, you know, it was a really great success. It was a lot of fun to make, to write. And I got a lot of great feedback from it.
Well, I'm hoping that you'll remount it after you do Josephine's Feast. Now, now I'm going to pivot to Tierra. What are some of the roles you've done before this?
Earlier this year, I felt really grateful to be part of the sort of dancer conjurers in the last episode of House Full of Black Women, which was a sort of 7-year-long project to uplift questions around how can Black women have safety and belonging in Oakland. And actually, Ellen Sebastian Chang, who's directing Josephine's Feast, was a director on that project. And the choreographer was Amara Tabor-Smith. And part of my hesitation was that, you know, with the portal that we've gone through with lockdown and with COVID, this is actually my first time back on stage doing a play in almost 4 years.
Wow.
I'm blessed to be a working actor in the Bay. Never thought that there would be a break like that for any reason. So the last piece I was in before COVID was this piece called From the Ground Up that was done by Theater First. And actually, Brittany Fraser, who plays Lex in Josephine's Feast, wrote one of the pieces in it that I had the great fortune of acting in. It was a piece that was kind of an anthology of different original short pieces that were exploring kind of haunting, ghost, spirit sort of stories in this sort of mysterious place from different people's cultural backgrounds, and was a beautiful joy and journey to go through. And yeah, I had no idea that it would be almost this long before coming back on stage, but I feel so grateful that this is the story that is bringing me back and that I'm able to gather community around.
Yeah, I know when the actors started to go back to work, I would say it was sort of universal. Everyone who's creating was like, do I even remember how to create anymore? Do I remember how to act? I know it was very daunting for everyone. So I applaud you both for being able to get out there and, you know, sort of reclaim your artistry.
Thank you.
So once more for our listening audience, when and where for Josephine's Feast, and where can they get tickets?
Josephine's Feast is at the Magic Theater, which is out in Fort Mason Center, and it's running from this Wednesday through Sunday. So the last day will be Sunday, August 20th, and you can get tickets at magictheater.org.
And if people want to find out more about what you as a writer are doing and what you as an actress are doing, how do they go about doing that? And we'll start with you, Star.
I have a website called starfinchplays.com, and I'm also on IG at StarTheFinch.
Okay, and Tierra?
Sure. I am part of a collective of artists called We Rise Production, and you can find us on Instagram at We Rise Production.
Excellent. Well, Star Finch and Tierra Allen, I want to thank you both so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having us, and thank you for coming out.
Oh, it was fun. It was totally fun. Plus, I've discovered a new restaurant, so I was really excited. It was delicious. I'll tell you about it later. People of Earth, this is your opportunity. There's that beautiful play, Josephine's Feast at the Magic Theater. And these two people, like all the people I get to talk to, just are just brimming with artistry and talent. And if you're not out in the world enjoying it and drinking it all in, it's because you're being willful. There was a pandemic. Everything shut down. Now things have opened up again. And go out and enjoy it as much as you can. Until next week, my friends. Ta-ta and toodly-doo.
I've got dreams, dreams to remember. I've got dreams, dreams.